Good morning, everyone. I'm happy to present this research that was supported by our Hopkins Center for AIDS Research. Here are my disclosures. With this background information, I'm sure I'm going to be preaching to the choir and that most of you already know this, but young MSM are particular increased risk for poor sexual outcomes in the U.S. Rates of gonorrhea, chlamydia, and syphilis are all downtrending, and as we've seen from the last several presentations, they are downtrending in all groups except for adolescent MSM. All adolescents except for MSM. And then we also know that young MSM suffer from HIV disparities as indicated by that classic CDC graph, which seems to have gone unchanged for the last several years, and that young black MSM suffer an even greater burden as seen by the similar graph, which has gone unchanged for the last several years. We know that young black MSM aged 13 to 24 in the U.S. accounted for about 54% of new infections among young MSM in 2014, and in Baltimore, there are similar numbers. That same group accounted for 98% of the new infections among young MSM, and 40% of new infections among all MSM in 2013. Majority of these cases occurring in those 18 to 24, with the other 6% occurring in those between 16 and 18. And there's also high rates of unrecognized infection in this population, and they're often characterized as hidden or hard-to-reach populations. So our outreach, all of our outreaches have typically focused on physical venues. For MSM, these have been venues that have included locations such as bars or clubs, parks, and other public locations, commercial sex venues, et cetera. I've got a couple of pictures of some of the clubs that are in Baltimore, Club Hippo, Paradox, and Club Buns. But now, especially on young MSM, that those venues are increasingly including internet venues. And as illustrated by the fact that Club Hippo and Paradox are actually now closed in Baltimore, so there's certainly more movement towards the internet and less movement to physical locations. And these internet locations have varied, starting off with telephone-based chat rooms, and I realize by mentioning that I'm aging myself a bit, but they've been moving on from telephone-based chat rooms to online chat rooms, social spaces, and now geo-social networking apps. And this has increasingly been reported as sex partner meeting locations by newly diagnosed, HIV-diagnosed young black MSM in Baltimore. So I'm sure most of you are familiar with these apps, but this is the particular app that we have that's fairly popular in Baltimore, Jacked. You essentially can open up your phone and see the number of people that are nearby based on a mileage estimate. And then if you click on a particular person's profile, you'll see a picture of their face or some other body part, and a little bit more information about them, and you can choose to reach out to that person through a direct message. So our objectives for this particular study was to explore the perspectives from these young men on the acceptability and feasibility of using these apps for HIV prevention services and programming. Our strategy was to actively recruit young men on this app, so our research assistants actually created a user profile within the app with an IRB-approved photo overlaid with study information. We had this lovely Johns Hopkins logo on the image that was uploaded to the app. The research assistant sent direct messages to potential participants using an IRB-approved telephone script, which doesn't really work on direct messaging, but sometimes our IRBs are not quite up to date with our newest recruiting strategies. And then our eligibility was 18 to 24 years old, African American or black, and MSM, and having reported meeting a sex partner on Jack within the past 12 months. And we used that sex partner loosely, included oral sex and anal sex. We wanted to find high-risk individuals, people who were at high risk for transmitting or acquiring HIV. So we recruited individuals who were logged on in social venues or in census tracts that were previously identified as high HIV transmission areas by some of the work that we've been doing with our health department, also supported by the CDC. And so we chose census tracts that had a high community, based on high community viral load data or HIV surveillance data. And you can see by the map, this is a map of Baltimore, the dark blue spaces are those places which were classified as having high community viral load and known areas of HIV transmission. Recruiting those individuals, they completed a 60 to 90 minute semi-structured interviews, and we interviewed those, or we transcribed those interviews and analyzed them using thematic analysis. So our response rate was fairly low. About 207 folks were approached by the RAs within the app. 71 of those persons approached responded, 61 expressed interest, and of those 61, 22 were ineligible for the study, and 21 did not complete an eligibility screening questionnaire, which again was within the app, and so it went fairly slowly, and people sort of responded when they opened up the app. And then eventually 17 interviews were completed. So our sample size, again, was 17, 18 to 24 with a mean age of 21.4. The last HIV test for 13 of those individuals was less than a year ago, for 3 was 1 to 2 years ago, and 1 was never tested. And the HIV status at last test was positive in 3 of those individuals. 2 of those individuals were within the past year that they had recently been diagnosed with HIV. About 29% or 5 had had an STI in the past 12 months, and 4 of those individuals reported having 3 or more partners in the last 30 days. The remainder had about 1 to 2 partners in the past 30 days. So our findings were these. So we found that GSN apps provided increased opportunity to reach populations that are younger and potentially less knowledgeable about HIV risk. The acceptable strategies for reaching out to youth on these apps were through pop-up or banner advertisements for local HIV testing and other services and other public health messaging. Direct communication about HIV STI exposure was also acceptable for some individuals. And also that GSN apps are these clubs that never end and potentially offer better access to youth than other venue-based strategies. So I like to present the actual words of the individuals that I interview, despite some of the more colorful language, which we're going to try to be fairly true to in this and reading these quotes. So this first quote illustrates the fact that there were certainly younger men and boys essentially on these websites. So this person, 22-year-old, says, "I got certain friends, a few friends that's on that website and just not telling nobody what they got. And they just on that website doing what they want. And nowadays that's coming in. There's so many young people that's coming in to this website, 17, 14, 16, and they're not knowing. So they're not knowing what's out there." So lots of young and unaware and underage users, despite the 18-year-old criteria for joining such a website. You basically click to say that you're 18, so, you know, that could mean anything. Many describe Jack as actually their first introduction to gay community and same-sex partners, and as we've seen, and I've seen in my research and others, they tend to have age-discordant partners because of that, being exposed to adults on an adult website. So acceptable engagement strategies. So as I said, banner and pop-up advertisements were acceptable. This young man says they have promotions like the Baltimore Free Ball, or it's like this club night or something like that. So I know I pay attention, but I think people do pay attention even subconsciously. If you can continue to look at something over and over, and it's naturally going to be in your mind. So if you see stuff popping up, you can get condoms here or you can get tested here. When those situations come, you're like, you know, I think I saw something on Jacked about that. So indirect or passive communication was okay, and people were really interested in hearing about resources or access to local services or prevention information. Direct communication about HIV STI exposure was also something that was acceptable. We asked the individuals, how would you feel if the health department contacted you about an STI exposure? And this young man says, oh, that would be crazy, but I mean, it would be welcome. That would be really good. Because a lot of guys, I feel like maybe they would be embarrassed or ashamed or whatever, so they wouldn't want to make that call or just send that text and let you know, hey, I recently found out I was exposed to this. We've had sex recently. You should get tested. So it can just be completely foolproof. There were some participants who didn't think this was a good idea. He said to the same question, you calling me, you come to my house, so you ain't going to hit me up on Jacked. I have problems with that. Why are you hitting me up on Jacked? You the health department. Like, how you think that's going to work? You, the health department, come to my house, make me feel like this shit is dangerous, make me feel like, oh, bitch, you better get your shit together. Don't hit me. Don't hit me up on Jack with that. I'm going to laugh. So what we pulled from this was essentially that communication needs to match the legitimacy of existing outreach strategies. People commented over and over again that really there was a lot of sort of fake profiles and fake promotions on Jack, and so they were very wary about things, anything that came across to them. So they wanted some legitimacy to these messages. And then there was also objections due to communication based on demographic characteristics or risk groups. Do I think it's a good way to reach other people? Yes. Do I think they're going to be readily available to receive that information? They're sure not, because young gay men are going to think, you think I have HIV because I'm young and I'm gay, so that's why you're sending me this. It's about the way you approach it. You can't talk to somebody and then say, hey, here's this HIV prevention website that I'm doing. It's kind of like, are you hitting me because you thought I had HIV or you thought I'm at higher risk than anybody else? And then finally, perhaps these are better access than clubs and bars. So we asked individuals how much time they actually spent on Jacked, and this young man said, well, this is really bad, but I'm probably on there like every day. I'm not looking to have sex every day, but I pull up the app almost every day to either just look on the radar thing, who's around me, or if I'm like outside, you know, who's gay in this building or whatever. I'll be on there throughout the day, but I won't sit on there for hours looking. I'll get on there for like 5 minutes, and then I'll just get bored, or I won't see anybody who I think is cute or whatever, and I'll just close it and get on later or something. So essentially, the prevention messages that we would send through these apps would benefit from the fact that the people are using it during idle time, and there's no competition with other activities. So when someone's in a club, it's not their idle time. They're there for a particular purpose, either to have fun or to meet somebody. And so prevention messages may be more, there may be a barrier to prevention messages in those settings. But if you're sort of on your app like you're on Facebook, then that's sort of idle time that may people may benefit from actually reaching out to people during that time. And then a couple more quotes. I'm like, oh, new boys on here, all these young people, I swear to God, once you see that Jack, you see trade boys, you see boys in the hood, boys you've never seen, you see all of that. And then we asked if there are certain areas that people logged on, and this individual says, well, I know certain areas are very popular with men, especially within the city. I'll do each area, so I'll sign on in each area. West Baltimore, I'll say like near Madaman, which is a mall in Baltimore that was sort of in Penn North, which is the center of where the unrest was a couple of years ago. Or on the east side around Morgan, which is an HBCU. Popular areas that have landmarks that people know about. So essentially there's potential access to a wide variety of young MSM who may not attend traditional gay social venues and may also be clustered in other areas of the city that we don't necessarily do outreach in. So it sort of gives you an opportunity to identify those areas. So our limitations were that it was a small sample size, but because it's qualitative research, we're able to go fairly in depth with these individuals. We did have a low response rate, and that was particularly concerning, given that we were trying to ask the question as to whether or not you'd be interested in someone reaching out to you on an app, and had a fairly low response rate from that. But the findings may not apply to young black MSM in other settings or using other apps. But we feel like there's some important conclusions and implications. Again, maybe a tool for reaching otherwise hidden, underage youth engaging in risk behavior with limited access to prevention messages. These young MSM interface with these apps multiple times a day, which eventually provides multiple opportunities to engage them. Direct communication about exposures may be acceptable, but there need to be strategies that legitimize and authenticate these communications. And then ads may be an acceptable but costly engagement tool, and we have limited data on whether and what types of ad strategies are most effective at reaching youth. So some of our next steps are to do this using focus groups and recruiting them not directly through the app, because certainly we recruited a potentially biased population of folks who are willing to engage with us on the app in the first place, so they might be more willing to engage with the health department or some other person through the app. So we wanted to do some focus groups of people that are recruited through other mechanisms. And then we also are hoping to test the effectiveness, both the reach and uptake of geo-targeted advertisements on these apps. Varying content, target population, and timing to see which most effective at reaching these youth. And then this work also informed a recently funded CDC Minority Development Award, which also will focus on how we access young people within sex partner meeting venues, including internet venues. So I believe that's it. I wanted to acknowledge young men that participated and share their voices and stories, my resource support team, mentor team, and the funding sources, as I mentioned earlier. Thank you.
Hi, thank you for that excellent presentation. I did have a question regarding some of the questions asked of the individuals on Jack. Were any of the questions centric on what those sexual practices they engage in look like, you know, what they're doing, are they using condoms or not, are there age discrepancies between them and their partners, power play dynamics, and so forth? Was there any information obtained from that context that could maybe play a role in counseling once they come in for testing?
Yeah, so this was a small component of a larger project, so we did ask all of those questions and are still analyzing the data on those particular questions and content, but certainly we were really interested in basically exploring how people are using and how young people are using these this particular app, how they're using it to meet partners, how they're using it to mitigate their sexual risks, how they're using it to judge whether or not a partner is risky or not, those questions about condom negotiation, all of those things, and it's been fairly deep and rich findings, so we're in the process of analyzing that.
Excellent. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks. That was really interesting and I think helped us think about how to move forward. So it sounded like you encountered some sort of technological obstacles to recruiting because of how long the back and forth it took. Have you thought about ways that you could make it more effective? Do you have ideas for how to do that?
So I think part of this is going to involve educating our IRB about these new technologies and sort of new ways that we need to use to recruit individuals. I think our IRB and other IRBs are very don't have a lot of information or knowledge about these sites, so it took a lot of explaining just to even tell them what we're doing. So one of the things that we did start doing with their approval was to actually sort of move the recruiting and the eligibility kind of back and forth to a telephone call so they didn't have to go back and forth through the app. But it was important to let them know sort of what they were getting into before you talked to them on the phone. So that was one of the strategies. But I think a bigger strategy is going to be we can't use telephone scripts in the direct messaging. We have to have some other strategy. Thank you.
Hello. What examples of risk mitigation did you find on the app?
Yeah. So some of it was what you might expect. People made assumptions about individuals' risk based on how sexual promiscuous they thought people were based on the content in their profile. So if they had dick pics or other sexually explicit pictures, they would think that those persons potentially having more sex and maybe more risky. Based on how people approach them, if they approach them asking for sex immediately, people were thought that may be a person that's really out there, maybe more risky, so they sort of avoided those particular individuals. Other things was direct communication about condom use and about HIV status was something that some people talked about doing. For the most part, there wasn't that direct communication. So it's sort of it varied across the board, and we're really looking into that in more detail. But I think that was one of the things we really wanted to explore. So how are people using the app, but also some of the features on the app, so you can filter by different strategies, or you can talk about what your potential risk behaviors might be. That particular app doesn't have a lot of options to do that, sort of to select different things when people write things within the profile, and people use that information to kind of judge whether or not that person may or not be risky.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Alberto Perez, Long Beach, California. I was just wondering how you guys came about deciding to use Jax as strategy, and actually, did you guys have to get permission from them? Like, did you have to see the terms of service, and how did you guys go about that?
Yeah, so we chose Jack specifically because that was one of the most frequently nominated sex partner meeting venues of the GSN apps of young people who are newly diagnosed with HIV. So that's the app where people are meeting partners and where HIV transmission may actually be occurring. So that's why we selected that as opposed to some of the other apps. We did not ask permission from Jack. We found that in some of our research, they haven't sort of booted us out, so we've basically just taken advantage of that and just kind of put up a profile that met all of their criteria for profiles, but was a research profile, essentially, okay. And didn't have any bad luck with that, fortunately, this time around. Thank you very much.